In a world full of great jazz pianists, Fred Hirsch stands out. He's developed a style that's easily recognized as his own. You'll be able to hear him live in a venue that means a lot to him, the Village Vanguard, now through this Sunday the 16th. He also has a new two-disc album from Palmetto Records, which is called Alive at the Vanguard, and I'm very pleased to welcome Fred Hirsch back to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
So many live recordings have been made at the Vanguard. What is it about that place that makes it special?
Well, I mean, I think Sonny Rollins was the first to do it in 1959. This is my third live album there, two trios and a solo album, which is a pretty rare, rare occurrence. There's something about the design of the place. I think if you were actually an architect or club owner designing a club that looked like that, they would probably say, you know, what are you smoking? I mean, it's
right, with low ceilings,
and it's a triangle. It's weird, you know, but it's one of the few places in the world for me that I can play absolutely pianissimo, as soft as I possibly can, and everybody in the room can really feel that. There's a certain beautiful kind of stillness to it and intimacy. And it's a dry acoustic. It's a little unusual, but I first played there, you know, many years ago with Joe Henderson and Sam Jones and Art Farmer, and you know, I have a long history with that place, and of course all the ghosts on the walls, and there's just something. It's kind of like, to me, the Carnegie Hall of jazz clubs.
Well, how does the sound compare to working in a recording studio?
Well, a live recording, and I've really become. I've done more live recordings in the last number of years than studio recordings. You know, there's something about a live recording. You kind of can't start over. You can't take anything back.
Are you getting energy from the audience?
You get
well?
Energy from the audience. You're giving a performance. And, you know, with the level of the people I play with, you know, if we happen to record the whole week, but I'm sure if we did two or three nights, I'm sure we'd get a nice disc out of it. I was thrilled that Palmetto was up for putting out two discs, because it's like two sets. It's like, you know, going to the Vanguard for an evening.
15 tracks.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure you recorded a lot more.
Yeah.
So you had to go through it and say, I just think that I handled this a little better than on this one than I did on another
yeah.
one.
Yeah. When I did my previous album, Alive at the Vanguard, which came out last year, I listened and listened. I'd recorded the whole week, and I decided to release the last set straight through. You know, just as I played it, no changes, no edits. And I'm sure someday there'll be a volume two and I'll go back through the other 11 sets and kind of make up a virtual set. But there was something about that, just as the culmination of a week, it just had a vibe. You know, there might have been a flaw here or there, a slipped finger, whatnot, but I've never been one to really worry about that.
Throughout your career, I've mostly known you as somebody who led trios. Of course, you worked as a sideman before, and you mentioned some pretty good people. But let's talk a bit about the trio format, for example. Tommy Flanagan once said that the hardest part for him was to find a drummer who can swing without being overwhelming in a piano trio.
Very, very true. And I've been lucky. I've worked with some great, great drummers in my trio. Joey Barron, Tom Rainey, Nasheed Waits, now Eric McPherson, who's an absolute magician. He really knows how to create energy and color and with you know, great transparency, and he's extremely creative.
Well, you've said once that when a trio is right, it's very strong, but also very fragile. What did you mean by that?
Well, I mean, sometimes a tempo might be misinterpreted by one or more of the band members and kind of settle in a strange place. If we can't really hear each other well, you know, it can be very difficult. The Vanguard, we don't use any monitor speakers, minimal PA. It's almost like playing acoustically.
Part of the problem for many musicians is in keeping a group together is that people go off and take jobs elsewhere. So how do you keep that going?
Well, I mean, I do my best right now to always hire John and Eric, but, you know, if I have an upcoming U.S. tour and John's not available, so I'm going back to Drew Gress, who's a fantastic bass player who I played with for 20 years. So you have to have guys in the bullpen that know your material.
And is that important, that longevity? Do you find yourself playing something and then hearing something from the bass player or the drummer that could only come as a result of them knowing you so well?
I think so. I mean, I have my own way of playing, my own way of doing things. A lot of the young bass players that I've heard and played sessions with, they haven't really done their homework in terms of really understanding harmony in a deep way. They're great if you give them some vamp and some weird meter and they can eat that for breakfast. But, you know, I like to play, you know, I still play standards and ballads. In addition, you know, more than 50% is music that I've composed, and each piece I've composed has a different, you know, kind of heart to it.
Well, it's been my experience that when jazz is going at its best, there's a conversation going on between
absolutely
all of the musicians, rather than just somebody keeping time and somebody else off on his own.
Although, you know, if you look at the Ahmad Jamal trio, he's always functioned as a soloist with a rhythm section accompaniment.
Yeah, and Art Tatum did the same.
Right, as opposed to Bill Evans, who kind of pioneered the more conversational approach. I think I'm somewhere between the two. You know, I like a band that can lay it down, and also I like a band that understands the subtleties of what I'm doing.
My guest is Fred Hirsch, who, with his trio, bassist John Ebert and drummer Eric McPherson, will be performing at the Village Vanguard on 7th Avenue South now through this Sunday. If you want ticket information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. He has a new two-disc album called Alive at the Vanguard. Didn't you come to jazz relatively late?
I did. I kind of learned to play jazz on the bandstand in Cincinnati starting as a 17, 18-year-old. I didn't know about any jazz education that was going on then. I didn't have access to a lot of fake books or magazines. The older players kind of, you know, they insisted that you learn the tunes, and you kind of got a lot of tough love on the bandstand, and it was a great way to learn in the oral tradition.
But really, the hardest thing for many musicians who've been classically trained is to learn how to improvise. Is that something that came easily to you?
I was always an improviser. Going back to age 5 or 6, I started composing music very young. With jazz, I mean, it was not only learning the material, but it was getting my time together. That's really the difference.
In the old days, musicians pretty much only learned from playing with other musicians. But you did
people
today
stole from each other. That's how it really evolved. Everybody just kind of heard that and said, oh, that's cool, and they built on it or swiped it.
Now, pretty much everybody goes through school. You went through the New England Conservatory eventually?
Yeah, I went to work with Jackie Byard, who was one of my piano heroes. Mm-hmm. And I've been teaching there. I still am there on and off since 1980. I think it's the finest school in the country for creative music.
You mentioned earlier you played with some pretty incredible people. Stan Getz, Joe Henderson, Billy Harper, Lee Konitz, Art Farmer. Do you learn something from each of those people when you're working as a sideman?
Absolutely. I could go on and on about the things that I learned that from things that they might have said in passing, but also just being around people night after night and hearing them, come up with it.
But even though they have very different approaches, Art Farmer, let's say, quite different than a Joe Henderson.
Of course. But there's always something to learn. I learned a lot from playing with the great singers that I've played with. I mean, you know, I do a lot of work as a solo pianist. That's become, you know, a specialty of mine. And that's a place where I can kind of put all that stuff together, along with my interest in piano sonority and counterpoint and kind of being more orchestral.
You talked about some of the places you like. When you came to New York, Bradley's was a great place for pianists.
That was graduate school for me. That was graduate school. And it was also trial by fire. I mean, you played four sets, six nights a week, and always on the last set, everybody would come over from their gig at the Vanguard or whatever, and you were. I played there with Sam Jones and Buster Williams and George Mraz and Charlie Hayden, you name it. And they'd come in the last set, and you'd look down the bar, and there was, you know, Tommy Flanagan and Jimmy Rolls and Joanne Burkeen. And every, it was like, you know, Sir Roland Hanna.
All these great pianists.
And you just sort of had to say, well, you know, I probably am not going to blow them away. I'll just do what I do and hope that they enjoy it.
Did anyone know that you were gay at that time?
Some my friends did, but I was not public, you know, in the press in any way.
Jazz is almost like sports in some ways. The worst thing you could do is say Lester Young was gay at one point. Did that change?
I don't mean to pat myself in the back here, but I was probably the first one to really come out with it in a very big way. I mean, I also came out about being HIV positive in the early 90s, but I've always felt that if you're going to be who you are, you can't really compartmentalize too much. But I also believe that there's no such thing as gay music. I mean, if it's instrumental music, okay, so Ravel was gay or Schubert or Handel, but that doesn't mean they wrote gay music. And I don't think there's a unified gay sensibility either. People might say, oh, you know, Fred plays pretty ballads, so he must be gay, but Lester Young played pretty ballads, Sonny Rollins played pretty ballads, you know, some pretty, you know, tough cats played pretty ballads.
And Michelangelo painted some pretty muscular paintings.
That's
Leonardo as well. But it's a kind of a miracle. It says a great deal about your strength of will that you're alive and well now, isn't it?
Yes.
Do you mind telling us about your health crisis in 2008, which came after your previous visit to this show? You
right.
already were known to be HIV positive, but you had a serious problem.
Yeah. In the early months of 2008, the AIDS virus had attacked my brain and I had dementia.
The HIV cocktail?
Yeah, it broke through. Fortunately, some new drugs came along and have, you know, kept it at bay. And then the summer of 2008, I got a really wicked pneumonia and I was in a coma for 2 months. And when I came out, I couldn't eat for 8 months. I couldn't walk. I couldn't drink anything. I couldn't talk. I lost the use of a vocal cord. I certainly couldn't play the piano. I had virtually no memory. And it's miraculous that I'm playing with more energy than ever, touring all over the place, involved in a lot of projects, including something called My Coma Dreams, which will be done later this year at the Miller Theater. It's a full evening piece with multimedia and an 11-piece ensemble and an actor-singer that's based on dreams that I recalled coming out of my coma, some absurd about Monk and some very scary and some just surreal.
What's it like being in a coma? I mean, you don't know, right? It's just like being asleep.
Yeah. I mean, the last thing I remember is talking to my partner in the apartment and then gradually waking up in this strange place.
Now, you lost your memory, but obviously you've regained it, or have you just built up new memories? And I wonder about your piano playing. Do you see, when you listen to pre-coma recordings, do you hear a different pianist?
I hear a little bit of a different pianist, I have to say. It's incorrect. I shouldn't have really said I lost my memory. But say, for instance, I would sit down and play a tune maybe that I'd written and I couldn't remember, you know, I couldn't keep it together. My hands were very swollen and sore and I thought they're never going to come back. And, you know, I think this current album and the previous one, Alone at the Vanguard, maybe are a testament to, you know, how far I have come with the help of great physical therapy, a wonderful partner, drugs, you name it.
And you called this album Alive at the Vanguard, obviously telling us you're still alive.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not live at the Vanguard, it's
right.
Alive at the Vanguard.
Yeah, I did Alive at the Vanguard some 10 years ago, but, you know, I think... you know, it's not just trying to be cute, but it is a statement. And I do really feel very alive right now and certainly grateful.
I've heard that when people compliment you by saying, my, you sounded really beautiful, you're not always all that pleased. A reviewer for The New Yorker said that you specialize in high lyricism and high danger. Do you like that better?
I like that. Yeah, I mean, if there's no danger in jazz, then it's not happening for me. I mean, you know, if it's safe and somebody's kind of trotting out what they know, when I go to a jazz performance, I want to see something unique, something on the edge.
But you also you don't want to be one of those esoteric musicians. You've said in a documentary about your life, Let Yourself Go, that jazz can be hip guys playing hip music for other hip guys, and that doesn't work except for the 4,000 hip guys around the world. If you wanted to have something to do with your life, you have to understand what life is.
I still believe that, and I think, you know, it's important to reach people and to draw them in rather than hit them over the head.
You've said that Glenn Gould is one of your favorite classical heroes because the unorthodox way he approached the canon?
Not just that. I think first of all, he was a visionary in the way that he used the recording studio and the recording process. He was maybe one of the greatest pianists at teasing out contrapuntal voices. And whatever you play, whatever he played, whether you would say I like it or not, you can't deny that it was well thought and beautifully executed.
Now, you do a whole bunch of different kinds of things, and you do them on different record labels?
I've been with Palmetto for a while, but I have a lot of side projects that I do for other labels.
The side projects, are each one's different?
Yeah. I have a double trio coming out with the French pianist Benoit Delbecq, two pianos, two basses, two drums, and electronics. A duo with my longtime trumpet player, Ralph Alessi. A duo with a wonderful young guitarist, Julian Lage. A project with my bassist, John Hebert, which is mostly Mingus's music. It's one of the beauties of living in New York and being on the kind of international scene is to get to stretch myself.
And since you have such a wide repertoire, should I assume that no two sets will be alike over this week at the Vanguard?
No two sets will be alike. And even if you heard the same tune on Tuesday and Sunday, you'd get a different read.
When you're in the middle of something, do you get lost in it?
Yeah, and that's the idea. I mean, I've always closed my eyes when I play, and I try to just almost imagine, like, okay, this is a recording, and I'm listening to it, but I'm also making it. And I feel like if I can really be connected with what I'm playing, then I have a good chance that those in the audience who are capable will connect what I'm playing and take the journey with me.
We're going to go out with another track from your new two-disc album called Alive at the Vanguard on Palmetto Records. Fred Hirsch and his trio will be performing at the Village Vanguard at 178 7th Avenue South through this coming Sunday. Thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure, absolutely.